This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Think fall vacation, and the images that come to mind might include New England's leaves, a late-season dash to the beach, or maybe a pilgrimage to your alma mater for homecoming. Some, though, prefer a more spirited getaway, complete with ghosts and goblins. In the run-up to Halloween, haunted vacations have become yet another niche in the travel industry. You can lie awake awaiting apparitions in haunted inns or walk in the footsteps of murderers or their victims. A quick search on the internet will turn up hundreds of spooky options, from Salem, Massachusetts to Edinburgh, Scotland, and a growing number of specialty guidebooks offer details on the scariest destinations. Later in the program, the report of the 9/11 Commission is hailed for its literary merit, and an update from Baghdad on the bomb attacks earlier today inside the Green Zone. But first, haunted travel. If there's a ghostly attraction where you live, or if you've vacationed with the dearly departed, call and share your tales from beyond. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Jeff Belanger, author of The World's Most Haunted Places and founder of GhostVillage.com. He's at the studios of member station WGBH in Boston. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
Let me begin asking why otherwise normal people choose to visit places that are supposed to be scary.
Well, I think it's, first of all, it's actually educational in a strange way. It's something that these ghost stories kind of beg us to learn a little bit about the history, to learn why these places might be haunted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of food for the mind, and it also tingles the mind.
Well, tell us about a couple of the haunted places that you visited that might enter this category.
Well, you know, how I got started in this, I used to travel for business and for vacations and things like that. And whenever I went someplace, I'd always look for a haunted location to check out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it started for me. But certainly some of the most popular locations are, say, Gettysburg, where, Civil War battles took place, Salem, Massachusetts, as you mentioned, but even Savannah, Georgia. The Queen Mary in California, places that really are steeped in history and have a lot of ghost reports attached to them.
Mm-hmm. In an odd way, I mean, you go to some place like Salem, where obviously the witch trials were held all those years ago, and you can see the graves of those who were killed as a result of those trials. And serious stuff, the presentations sometimes come across a little theatrical.
Absolutely. You know, I've taken ghost tours, and that's another thing that's growing, are the ghost tours in these locations, where you'd walk around with a guide, and they're definitely a little sensational. If you want the real history, you're probably going to have to do your own research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a place like Gettysburg, obviously, a lot of people believe a lot of different things about hauntings and superstition, but clearly the events that happened there are trivialized by the idea that this is a ghost tour.
Yeah, you know, it's certainly, you know, over 50,000 Americans lost their lives in just the span of 3 days, and that really was a lot of tragic history there. I was actually in Gettysburg just about 3 weeks ago for a haunted campout. So, and we were in the battlefields because they're open until 10 o'clock at night, and I couldn't get over the amount of people from, you know, in their 50s and 60s to families with children who are wandering around the battlefields at night. And these battlefields aren't photogenic in the first place, but they're out there trying to take pictures and look for ghosts.
How did you transfer what seems to have been an avocation of going to haunted places and turn it into a business?
Well, as I mentioned, I traveled for business. I used to be a reporter for a small newspaper, and around Halloween, you start looking for local haunted places to write about.
No.
And that was always my favorite story. Yeah, can you imagine?
I have a Halloween story every year?
Every year. It comes around, just like clockwork. And so I really got into those stories. And I stopped writing for newspapers because I needed to make a better living. And I started this website because I wanted to keep publishing, and just publishing what I loved best, which were the ghost stories.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I got to travel. I got to travel to Europe and all over North America, and I'd collect these stories, and I'd write about the places, and I'd interview people that had firsthand ghost encounters. and kept putting them up on the website, and it just pretty much grew from there.
Well, if you've gone on one of these haunted vacations, or if there's an attraction in your town that people come to see because it's haunted, or maybe come to stay at a certain place, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Let's talk with John, who's on the line with us from Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, John.
It's we had a very interesting trip. I took my kids on an 11-day camp trip sort of along the Lewis and Clark Trail. The first evening we stopped at a bed and breakfast in Hannibal, Missouri, and had a very haunted experience. It was very interesting. I'm always a skeptic about that, and it was a little girl who had died in the house probably 100 years earlier, and the people that own the place don't really advertise it, and it was interesting to hear you all talk about this experience, but we certainly experienced it. Doors knocking, footsteps walking in the house, and the house is very interesting. It was built in, obviously, in the 1800s, and it's a beautiful old, it has a widow's watch in the center, and it's a historic town right in the middle of Hannibal.
What did the people who run the place say when you told them about this?
I would say that they were a little embarrassed about the idea of it, but the next day when we talked about our experience with the doorbells and thing, hearing footsteps and such, they said that they had been, they had experienced it for the last 20 or 30 years. So,
Jeff Belanger, if those people chose to advertise their haunted nature, would you think they might do better?
There's really two schools of thought that I've encountered with people who own haunted establishments, especially haunted businesses. On the one hand, I've found that ghosts are definitely very good for business. If you own a bar or a restaurant, a good ghostly legend attached to it will draw people out of their way to see it. And people who disbelieve may never hear about it or won't care. It won't affect them either way. It'll only help you. That being said, I have encountered places that just don't want to talk about their ghosts. They know they're there. They acknowledge that, people do comment on these experiences, but they don't want to talk about them. Certainly around Halloween, if it's a bed and breakfast, if it's a hotel, the rooms book up, and in certain parts of the country, they actually get more expensive to stay there for the Halloween evening.
John, would you want to go back to this place?
We had a really interesting experience, and the people's tale actually was quite good because historically, this little girl apparently was dying at a time when Samuel Clemens was in town, and he had come to her bedside and told her stories, and they had a lot to tell about it. I think that they'd really have a nice marketing video if they wanted to do that.
All right, John, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Let's talk now about one of those places that does mention its supernatural connections. Joining us from the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado, is Curtis Kelly. Curtis has lived in Estes Park for 20 years, is a tour guide at the Stanley Hotel. Welcome.
Good afternoon to you.
Tell us a little bit about the Stanley Hotel.
Well, the Stanley Hotel is now 95 years old. It's a beautiful historic hotel here in Estes Park, Colorado. Of course, Estes Park is famous, among other things, for being the gateway to Rocky Mountain National Park on its eastern side. But in addition to that, we have this beautiful historic hotel, which became even more famous when a fellow named Stephen King decided to write a book called The Shining. And, of course, he writes about a fictional hotel called The Overlook, but it's very clear in there that the Stanley Hotel was his inspiration.
And as a result of that, do people come to this hotel specifically because they think it's haunted?
They do, and I kind of listened into a little bit of the earlier discussion about because I think the Stanley Hotel over the past 25 years has sort of wrestled with that too. Do we talk about that people believe there may be ghosts in mm-hmm. our hotel, and for a while they didn't want to associate themselves with The Shining, but I think in recent years it's been quite the opposite has proven well for them that. We find that people come because they're intrigued by that. That's adds to part of the charm of it. By and large, most people have a pleasant stay and have no ghostly experiences, but there's enough people that do and stories that circulate that keeps the interest high and going very strong.
What kind of ghosts? I understand they're supposed to come in all kinds of varieties.
Yes, indeed. I can tell you one of the more enduring stories that has been circulating around the hotel. And in fact, the earliest record of this goes all the way back to 1976 when a woman who was a manager at the hotel back in the days when they used to shut down for the winter, was working and heard some music, and she thought, well, maybe one of the other managers had a radio on, and so she strolls down the hall and looks in the music room, which is a very beautiful room with classical, delicate features, but of course it's dark in there, and she hears this lovely music. And as she looks in, she realizes the keys are moving on this beautiful piano. And at the same time, there isn't anyone sitting at the piano. And she says that she can stand outside and does so for several minutes, but once she crosses the threshold, the playing stops, as if the individual, the presence that was there, sensed that she was there and the time had come to stop. And many people believe that it just might be Flora Stanley, who comes back to play that piano, the wife of the builder of the Stanley Hotel, because it was her beautiful Steinway piano that was given as a grand opening present that still sits in the music room.
Does everyone, every guest at the hotel make it through the night, or some people have to get up and leave?
There are occasional late night checkouts. By and large, everyone has a very pleasant stay, and sometimes they get a little nervous because of their own psychological thoughts. You know, they're wondering if they're going to see something, and that's what scares them. But there have been occasional checkouts. There was a fellow a couple years ago who came downstairs about 11:30 and decided he was going to leave. And they asked, well, what's wrong? And he said, well, I was in room 318, and I got into bed, and my bed started to turn. And he said when he got out of bed and turned the lights on, the mattress was totally off kilter from the bed frame, and certainly not the way it was when he got into bed. And so apparently something in there wanted the room rearranged the way that they liked it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, is this the seasonal time of the year? Do people tend to go to the Stanley Hotel more often around the time of Halloween?
Absolutely. And I think, of course, we're very much a summer resort town, but we have very beautiful weather in the winter, so October can still be very nice, and the hotel has for many years been offering a costume ball on the Saturday night before Halloween, and this year's event is called Murder, Mayhem, and Mystery Ball, and it's a lot of fun. It almost looks like a scene out of The Shining, where all these people in all sorts of strange and eerie costumes come descending into the great dining hall of the Stanley Hotel, and it looks almost as if they're filming a scene from Stephen King's Shining.
So I guess the owners of the hotel have overcome whatever qualms they may have had.
I think so, yeah.
It sounds like
As we said, by and large, the ghost stories that circulate just add a certain charm to staying at the Stanley Hotel.
Mm. Thanks very much. And are you going to the ball this year?
I hope to peek in on that, yes.
That's right.
When you go to something like that, you just have to wonder who's really and who's just left over from the 1920s.
Curtis Kelly, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Curtis Kelly, a tour guide with the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. Still with us is Jeff Belanger, author of The World's Most Haunted Places. Here's an email we got from Betty Bishop in Chester, California. I work in an old hardware store, she writes, that we think is haunted by the ghost of a longtime manager. It's not an unfriendly feeling. Sometimes when I work late, it's a little comforting to know that he's around looking after me. But the eeriest place I have ever been is the Arizona Memorial. In Pearl Harbor, I really had a sense of the men lying below. It's an almost sacred feeling, and it stays with you long after you leave. And I guess, Jeff, that speaks in some ways to the same kind of circumstances you were talking about at Gettysburg.
Absolutely. And, you know, something else she mentioned was that these experiences aren't always scary. Sometimes, like the email said, it can be very comforting to sense a presence there almost looking out for you. Sometimes they are scary, and sometimes they're just sad, where you know there was a lot of death right where you're standing, and that certainly can weigh on you.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about haunted vacations. It's the time of the season, and we're taking your calls. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Back after a short break, I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing haunted vacation destinations here in the United States and around the world. Our guest is Jeff Belanger, a writer and founder of GhostVillages.com. Of course, you're invited to join us. Have you ever taken a trip that included ghosts and unexplained events? Would you like to? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And let's get another caller on the line. David is with us from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Hey, I got a question and then some comments. I was just wondering if your guest had ever had any interaction with any ghosts or spirits of any sort.
Jeff?
Well, actually, nothing that I would say is conclusive, but I've certainly been in the right place. I was in the catacombs of Paris and walking, you know, about 20 meters under the city, where this is where they've put 6 million human skeletons from overflowing cemeteries of over a century ago. And you're down there, it's very low light, it's very quiet, and if it's not crowded, you could be standing there completely alone. And, you know, maybe it was my mind, or maybe I did see some darting shadows running across these mounds of skeletons.
Isn't that used as a set for the Interview with a Vampire?
Yeah, well, something like it. There are a few catacombs in the world, but the one in Paris, it's a museum that you can actually tour and go through.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason I'm asking, I think that, you know, the people I know who have related experiences with ghosts would never, ever put themselves in a situation where they would encounter one again. There's a little town in North Arkansas called Eureka Springs, and there are, it's a very, very kind of a strange place. You get that spiritual feeling when you go there. It's just, there's a lot of artsy people there and really Art Deco type architecture and turn of the century stuff. And there is a hotel there called the Crescent Hotel that does have ghost tours. It has a very checkered history. It was at one time, it was a cancer hospital back in the 40s. And it actually has a morgue within the hospital. And it is a place that has to me, a very uncomfortable feeling about it. And I'm not a superstitious person. I don't think one way or the other about ghosts. But my wife and a friend of hers stayed there at a conference a year or so ago, and they were in a suite. And my wife was awakened by voices in the middle of the night, these really loud, urgent, angry whispers just all around her in the darkness. And she turned on her light, and they stopped. And she thought it must have been a nightmare, and she went back to sleep, and they woke her up again. And this time, when she reached for her lamp, it fell off the table, and she couldn't tell me whether she had touched the lamp and knocked it off or whether it fell off when she reached for it, but she finally got it back on, and the voices quit again. But it took her a long, long, long time to go back to sleep, and she had to leave her light on. And the next morning, she just basically looked terrible. And her roommate, who was in another room of the suite, took one look at her and said, "You heard them too, didn't you?"
Huh.
Yes. And she would never in hell spend another night in that hotel. It was a horrible experience for her.
Hmm.
And there's another old hotel there called the Basin Park. And she was there at another conference about a few months later. And another professional, not superstitious, not even particularly religious person, woke up in the middle of the evening, kind of early at night, and just felt very uncomfortable, felt like she wasn't alone, and got up and walked in the little entry room into her room, and there was a man sitting on the couch, and he just sort of vanished as she looked at him. And it was a terrible experience for these people. And another lady, a prominent attorney who was there for the conference, went down to the desk and said, and demanded to know, "Do you have any ghosts in this hotel? Are any of these rooms haunted?" And the lady at the desk goes, "Well, yeah, we got two haunted rooms." Very matter-of-factly. And she said, "Which one?" And she demanded to know. She said, and she named them. And one of them was room 412, I think, and that's where the woman had been staying. And
they probably charged extra for those two rooms.
You'd think so, but I'm just saying, I don't know what's going on, but I know the people who, like my wife, it would have never occurred to her that she would have had any experience with a supernatural. That was the last thing on her mind.
Yeah,
she doesn't even believe in that stuff, but she actually it scared the Jesus out of her, and we don't joke about it. I don't make little whispers like that or anything, because it makes her extremely uncomfortable. It was very traumatic.
Yeah, Jeff Belanger, sometimes I guess people should be afraid of getting what they asked for.
Absolutely, but I think a lot of people are seeking these kind of experiences because for what's happening is a lot of people's spiritual beliefs are diversifying, and you know, the big question we all have is there life after death? And when someone sees a ghost, what they're sure to be, you know, a ghost, a supernatural experience, that question's answered for that person forever. And it doesn't matter if someone else believes you or not. That question's answered for that person. And what's interesting, what David said in the call there with the first experience, that's really the rub, because there was someone there to confirm what his wife had gone through. Did you, you heard the voices too? And that, you know, when you're alone, you can always write it off that maybe my mind was playing tricks on me or something like that. But when you've got multiple witnesses experiencing the same thing, that's a little more profound.
Or the radio from the room upstairs, perhaps. But anyway,
right.
I wonder, have you ever talked to the proprietor of any of these places, given the fact that they do attract business, that admit to you know, getting up in a sheet in the middle of the night and running around the hotel?
No, but I know, for example, the Queen Mary, which is it's a hotel, but it's a floating hotel out in Long Beach, California. The Queen Mary was a transatlantic ocean liner that was retired and now permanently moored there in California. They give ghost tours regularly, and it's to the point now where they've actually put in sound effects and things like that throughout the tour. So that's kind of cheating.
Well, let's find out a little bit more about that. Everybody, of course, has heard of the famous Queen Mary. I guess we have to call it the QM1 now. But joining us from her office aboard the Queen Mary in Long Beach, California, is Robin Walkner, Director of Marketing. Good to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Was that an accurate description?
Sort of, but it's not current. We are known as a haunted vessel. In the past, we did offer a tour called Ghosts and Legends, which did use enhancements such as the special effects. However, there's been such a demand, you know, for more realism and more information about the hauntings that we've actually introduced additional tours that do not add sound effects or anything spooky. It's really up to the visitor to kind of assess what they feel and what they see.
Is this what you call now haunted encounters?
Yes. Actually, what we do is we offer something called a Haunted Encounters Passport, and that encompasses numerous different activities. One is the Ghosts and Legends show, which does offer the special effects. The other one is Ghost Encounters, which is really you're just going along with a tour guide to the haunted areas. The tour guide offers information, and it's really up to you, you know, to decide what you feel or see or anything like that.
Are there any great stories behind these ghosts?
We've got some really great stories. There have been, you know, thousands of reported hauntings aboard the Queen Mary from crew members, visiting paranormal experts, and our visitors alike. Some of them that occur quite often are down in the engine room, which is now open as part of just the regular tour of the Queen Mary. There are no special effects set up there. And often a man in overalls is often seen walking just to disappear into thin air.
So no particular great historical figure, but a guy who used to apparently work in the engine room.
He did work in the engine room, and there was a tragic accident back in 1966 where he was crushed in an airtight door. And all these years later, he's still spotted. People still hear screams coming from there. When they go to investigate, there's nothing there.
From your perspective in the travel industry, do ghosts sell?
I really do believe that they do. That's probably the number one question that people ask when they hear the Queen Mary is she really haunted? And people just can't get enough of the stories and the experience. We have an onboard hotel, and people are always calling wanting to stay in the so-called haunted rooms or do a haunted-themed weekend and things like that. And people are really, truly interested in the haunted side of the Queen Mary.
And I assume, again, this is the time of the year.
You know, to be honest with you, it's all year round. But in October, of course, there is an increased interest. But we actually, in October, don't really, from a marketing perspective, push the haunted thing. We do a separate event that has nothing to do with hauntings. That's called Shipwreck. And it's more of a haunted house type event.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Robin Walkner is Director of Marketing for the RMS Queen Mary in Long Beach, California, and was kind enough to join us from her office there. Continuing with Jeff Belanger, author of The World's Most Haunted Places, and, of course, with your phone calls and emails, 800-989-8255, TOTN at NPR.org. And let's get another caller on the line, and this is Ken. Ken's calling from South Bend, Indiana. Ken? Hello? Ken is apparently a ghost caller. Sorry about that, Ken. Let's go to another line now. Jacqueline joins us from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I'm calling because I've stayed at some of the most haunted destinations on purpose in order to try to write a ghost story. I've stayed in the room in Concord in the Hawthorne Hotel, that is one of the most haunted places on earth. I've even been to Hampton Court in England, and I can't buy a thrill. I can't get haunted no matter how hard I try. Are there some people who do just simply are Ghostbusters?
And you're one of them, apparently.
I am. Have you got any recommendations? I'm a novelist, and one of the ambitions, you might know who I am, but one of the ambitions of my life is to write a great ghost story like The Woman in Black.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, this is something I simply can't do research on, because wherever I go, the ghosts go elsewhere. I've gone to Salem at least 20 times, and I've never even felt a shiver.
Yeah, there are people like that, Jeff. In gardening, I was born with a black thumb. I just kill anything I touch. Jacqueline apparently is a ghost buzz killer. Any advice for her?
Well, you know, I consider myself about as psychic as a fence post, so I completely understand where she's coming from. It does seem that some people can tune in to these kind of phenomena more than others. You know, I've been in a lot of the right places as well, but apparently the wrong time. So I tend to think that.
Have you had any real experiences?
Not really. No, I kind of go at this more of as an objective reporter. So maybe I don't want them deep down. I don't know. I'm certainly open to the idea, but I never go expecting one.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
If you've been to the Hawthorne Hotel in Salem, though, very nice place.
It's a very nice place, and
yeah.
I stayed. I think it's in room 29, where you're guaranteed to see. You know, to hear and see the reenactment of some kind of horrific crime, and I passed a very good night's sleep. Thank you.
Did you get your money back?
No, I don't think. I think that the experience of staying in the very nice place was really what you pay for. But when you go on the ghost tour of Concord, they point to that window and say, "That's the place you should never stay." And of course, we make for that immediately, and nothing ever happens.
Do they charge extra for it?
No, they don't. You just have to reserve it a little in advance.
I see, but it's your typical two queens, no smoking?
What?
It's two queens, no smoking?
Yes. Maybe that was it. Maybe I should have had pipe smoke.
Could have been it.
Something like that. Anyway.
All right, Jacqueline. Thanks very much for the call,
and
good luck. Good luck with the book.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. We're talking about haunted vacations. If you'd like to join us, it's 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Jeff Belanger, author of The World's Most Haunted Places. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line, and this will be... see if this works. Tim is with us from Fort Charlotte in Florida.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, Neil. Hey, you're doing a great job. Fascinating subject, and thanks for having Jeff on.
Okay.
Look forward to reading your book, Jeff.
Oh, thank you.
My experience didn't happen down here in Florida. It happened in Nashville, Tennessee, and you're probably familiar with, even if you've never stayed there, the Grand Ole Opry Hotel, a beautiful facility there. And I was staying on the first floor of the building. I believe it was either room 102 or 105. And as Jeff was saying earlier, you know, once you've seen something, you're a believer for life. I was a skeptic, I would say, going into that night, and with no preconceived notions about the room or anything. I thought it was just another average hotel room. And in the middle of the night, I was awakened. And in the half light, I could see the mirror at the end of my bed, and it was like it was an old-fashioned false wall, like in either a movie prop or something, because I could see a man's hat above the mirror like it was like a doorway or something. And then a moment later, all of a sudden, he's right at the foot of my bed. I could see through him, but the figure was at the foot of my bed, hat still in place. And I said to the figure, I said, you know, how did you get in here? And just then, the guy who was at the same convention with me in the next bed started being aroused from sleep and said, what, you know? And I said, do you see that? And I pointed to the figure at the end of my bed. And he went to rub his eyes, and the figure dissipated. When I pointed at the figure, something struck the mirror right behind where he was standing. And here's where it gets eerie. The next morning, after we both showered, I was putting my clothes on, tied my shoes at the foot of the bed. I asked him, I says, hey, do you remember when I woke you up last night? He says, yeah, what was that all about? I said, I saw a ghostly figure at the end of my bed. And I said, when I gestured toward it, I said, it disappeared. But right when it disappeared, something struck the mirror behind it. And in broad daylight, with the sun streaming in through the windows, as I pointed at the mirror and he looked at the mirror, something struck the mirror, you know, invisible to us, but the exact same sound I'd heard the night before. Still gives me goosebumps to tell you about it right now.
Uh-huh. Jeff Belander, is the Grand Ole Opry Hotel on your list of haunted places?
No, you know, it was tough to narrow it down. There's so many, and, I mean, you could write an encyclopedia set just on haunted places. It's not one of the places I specifically covered, but I have heard of the legends of the Grand Ole Opry.
Mm-hmm. Well, would you ever go back, Tim?
Yeah, actually, I intend on trying to get that same room again to see if I could have an experience again, because it was pretty interesting, and I've since done a lot of research. When was your book published, Jeff? Has it just come out or something?
Yeah, it just came out in August.
Okay, beautiful. I'm going to pick up a copy, but because I've been reading quite a few things on the subject. I was in St. Augustine earlier last year, picked up a ghost story book there. That's a fairly haunted city. But, oh, one last thing, Neil. I've got a suggestion for Jacqueline.
Yeah?
The novelist?
Yep.
Sounds to me like if she's got writer's block, what she needs is a ghostwriter.
Thank you for the call, Tim, and for going where I swore I was not going to go. Anyway, appreciate that.
Okay, thanks.
And we'd also like to thank our guest today, Jeff Belander. If you could give one piece of advice for somebody who's going on one of these tours, something they should bring, or maybe an open mind.
Definitely an open mind, but not so open that your brain falls out, as the saying goes.
Jeff Belander, we appreciate it. Jeff Belander is the author of The World's Most Haunted Places, and he joined us from the studios of member station WGBH in Boston. When we come back from a short break, the 9/11 Commission report has been selected as a finalist for a National Book Award. If you've read the report, what do you think of its literary merits? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, as always, totn@npr.org. We're back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.